Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode of the Cortelinis podcast. I'm your host, Zach Lowy. Super excited today because we have an incredibly special guest in Cristiano Oliveira, one of my day ones on here, friend who I've known for a long time. And I'm really excited to have him on because we've tried to go with a different angle so far this season in terms of Cortelinis, in terms of trying to really, you know, not focus as much on the big teams, but focus really on the Primeira Liga as a whole. And that means not giving priority to any team, but focusing on, yes, your Benfica, your Porto and Sporting, but also your Marítimo, Gil Vicente, Moreirense, so on and so on. If you haven't yet, check out my thread on Gil Vicente and the Caso Mateus that I posted on Saturday on my Twitter page. You know, as great as that has been, and I think that's what separates us from a lot of other podcasts, the Cortelinis podcast. And that's why Cristiano, one of my best friends on here, has not come yet so far in the season because he's really a guy who, not trying to throw you under the bus, but you don't watch that much Portuguese football outside of your beloved Benfica.
I do, and I'm trying to put my daughter to sleep. I put on some lower. I'm joking. I absolutely love Portuguese football. Zach, thank you very much for bringing me on the Cortelinis podcast once again. It's always a pleasure to be on here with you. And today, it's a special topic. It's Sport Lisboa Benfica. And ladies and gentlemen, that's my specialty. So I'll leave all the other stuff for you guys, and I'll stick to Benfica because there's tons and tons of topics that we could just choose on here. And we could spend hours speaking about Benfica. So it's always a pleasure to be on with you, Zach. And, you know, I'm just like you, bro. You know, I adore speaking football. I adore being on here. And you are one of my day ones. So don't let wifey hear that, but you're one of my day ones.
If you haven't, check out Cristiano's Twitter account, a must follow. Really excited to have him on, as I said. So, you know, Benfica have had a very good start to the season, coming off, of course, their first loss of the season, which we discussed on last week's show with Inês Braga Sampaio. Definitely check that out as well, where, you know, they definitely dominated, but ended up losing to Portimonense via goal from Lucas Postignolo. Before we get into last weekend's news, we have to go back a year or so ago. So last summer, in the summer of 2020, Benfica spent a record amount of money on players. They brought in the likes of Darwin Núñez.
25 mil. Everton Cebolinha.
Everton Cebolinha.
Another 23 mil.
Pedrinho.
Pedrinho, 18 mil. Vertonghen was a free signing. I mean, Vertonghen, you know, so that one doesn't really get. Same thing. Look, the other one that it gets thrown in. Right. The numbers, the final tally, which is Otamendi. But we all know Otamendi, they had to balance the books with Man City. So in reality, it looks like Ruben Dias went to City for 63 and then Benfica paid 15 million for the other guy. So, you know, right.
The goal of that was to improve their results drastically after losing the title to Porto. Didn't quite work out that way, though. As we know, Benfica failed to get into the Champions League group stage, which caused them to sell Ruben Dias due to lack of money. And of course, bring in Nicolas Otamendi, who I would say has been very good so far. And that season, the first season under Jorge Jesus, who, let's remember, was coming off a near perfect campaign with Flamengo. Mm-hmm. Overall, it was a complete disappointment.
Jesus had more titles than he had losses at Flamengo. So that goes to tell the expectations of this guy coming back to the Luge. Right. When you look back at his first spell at Benfica, which was phenomenal, I was giddy. I was running around my block butt naked. You know, that's how excited I was. I was ecstatic. And then all of a sudden, you go into that first game against Pauk when everybody expected Benfica to come in, put in their strongest lineup. They just spent a gazillion amount of bucks. And you're thinking they're just going to demolish these guys in Novell, who's doing a phenomenal job at Palmeiras now. Right. And Benfica absolutely dropped the ball. They lose 2-1 in that game. Unfortunately for Benfica, we all know, I think taking away your Benfica rose-colored glasses, right? You still felt that Benfica was capable of winning that game, and you knew if there was a second leg, Benfica would have beaten them 2-3-0, if not more, at the start of the lose. But unfortunately, it was one of those, because of COVID, everything was changed around. Benfica only had one leg to make up the difference, and they go into PAOK, into Greece. They lose 2-1, and then, to top it all off, the kick in the nuts was a player that Benfica released just a couple of weeks earlier. Zalvik scores the game-winning goal, which ultimately they went up 2-0. He scored a second goal and then ultimately wound up being the game-winning goal. So, yeah, you know, an embarrassing The total, you know, plane crash of a start for Benfica last season. And then, look, with all the crazy expectations coming into that season, right then and there, you let the balloon, let the air right out of the balloon. And it was just, Benfica was trying to pick up the pieces after that. They started well, believe it or not, in the season, but then they lost to Boa Vista 3-0, and then that was it, man. The wheels came off the wagon, and it was just tough to get these guys back on track.
Benfica, of course, spending 105 million euros in the midst of a pandemic year. And yet it was a player, Andrija Zivkovic, who they had released. They had released from his contract just a few weeks prior, knocking them out of the Champions League. It really gives you a good idea of what their season was. But, you know, apart from improving their results, I would argue that one of the biggest end goals of this unprecedented, really unprecedented investment is the fact that Luis Felipe Vieira was set to take part in election, within an election which, of course, he won with 62.59% of the vote on October 28th, the lowest percentage he has ever obtained, but still enough to win the election and defeat João Noronha Lopes. And yet, just a few months after that, a few months after winning that election, it just so happens that Rui Costa ended up becoming the interim president. Can you explain, can you shed some light to the neutrals here? Why our beloved Luis Felipe Vieira had to leave the club that he had presided over after a historic 18-year spell?
Well, where do I start? So Luis Felipe Vieira had been under tons of pressure by the Saucios, and whether you supported them or not, it was just the fact that Benfica was dropping titles, domestically at least, in the manner that they were, and they weren't dominating in domestic competitions. Benfica, we all know, even in bad seasons, they still turn out the most fans, they turn out the most money, and so they should never be in those positions where we're not even qualifying for Champions League football. And then there's a lot of people that will tell you that the reason why Benfica spent that boatload of money was in order for this guy to win the elections. And look, credit to him. If that was his intention, it worked out. He won the election in as you stated, October 2020. Fast forward about 8 months or whatever it was to May. And he'd been associated. He'd been named in a bunch of different accusations and whatnot. And then finally, you know, the Portuguese authorities came up with something. I had a warrant, came in to start the lose, did what they had to do and locked my man up, took him in, and he had to, by default, he had to step away from Benfica. And then Rui Costa took over the reins. And there was a lot of people that were talking about the legality of that. If Rui Costa was the self-anointed, you know, president or not, could you appoint yourself the president? But at the same time, look, the house was burning and somebody needed to take the reins and needed to take control of the situation or else the whole building would come apart. And Rui Costa did that, came in, and for 3 months started announcing that, look, we're going to have elections. We're going to have, for the first time since 2000 or 2001, there was an actual debate of the presidential candidates on Benfica TV. There was a lot of different changes in those 3 months under Rui Costa. We all knew it was just a matter of fact, you know, it was like, you're wasting your time with these elections because Noronha Lopes announced that he was dropping out. He wasn't running again this year. And then really there wasn't much opposition. And the one guy that came in, stepped up from the group, Servido Benfica, Francisco Benitez, and he didn't really, he wasn't one of those people that instilled confidence in you going forward. But there he was. He was the only guy that stepped up, that had the balls to step up to Rui Costa and the big bad Benfica and stepped up there, went to Benfica TV, did his debate. And I think that debate hurt him more than it helped. But either way, we all thought it was just a formality. Rui Costa, the maestro, the guy that many people, like myself, have idolized. And he won. He won by a devastating margin. I think he won like 86 or 8, whatever it was, percent of the vote, which is the greatest ever, biggest margin ever in the history of Benfica elections, if I'm not mistaken. And if I am, it's right around there. But I think that's the case. Benfica had a record turnout. 41,115 Saucios turned out for voting. Only Barcelona worldwide had more Saucios show up, which they had 56,000. So look, the Saucios showed up, and when that happens, it shows you that they want change. They want that the Benfiquismo is still alive. For the last 10 years or so, there's been plenty of questions about if Benfica was alive because we had a one-man, you know, for lack of a better word, dictator. My man was running a show. He called the shots. And so everybody wanted change. And whether it was with Servito Benfica or Noronha Lopes or hopefully now Rui Costa, that's what we're going to get because Benfica is an absolute ginormous club that is being run to the ground by puppets and clowns that have no idea what they're doing with that club. And so hopefully now Rui Costa has come in. There's a lot of people that are still blaming us. Look, it's the continuity of Vieirismo or not. But fact of the matter is that in his 3 months, he did change a lot, you know, transparency. He brought a lot of different things to the table. And so we just hope that he holds true to his word and he takes Benfica back to the promised land because Benfica should be absolutely demolishing competition in domestically, at least. We're not talking about challenging for the Champions League because we understand for a Portuguese club, that is a very tough thing to do today. But in Portugal, there's no reason that Benfica in a decade wins 4 titles. They should be winning minimum 6. And Porto does a phenomenal job. Sporting is finally woken up, right? There's competition between those 3 clubs. But Benfica shouldn't go through the struggles, the ups and downs that they've gone through over the last decade. If you just look at gates, look at structure, look at, you know, the salary cap, look at everything. Benfica should be a lot better than what they've been. And so hopefully now Rui Costa brings in that change and takes Benfica over to the next level.
Just tying a knot on our discussion on the elections, a lot of criticism that, as you mentioned, you know, Luis Filipe Vieira has brought in what is known as Vieirismo. Are you concerned at all that Rui Costa, you know, winning with 85% of votes, are you concerned that this will bring about a continuation of Vieirismo? And are you worried that it's not going to be enough of a change that Benfica need to take the next step?
Oh, absolutely. I think myself and everyone else, I think even people that voted for Rui Costa, people that support Rui Costa, that, you know, that been following Rui Costa since he was 9 years old when he joined Benfica and he came up with the main squad, went out on loan, came back, won the title, went to Fiorentina. I think, you know, everybody's always supported this guy. This guy's always showed that he was a Benfiquista at heart. And I think, you know, people will never forget that. You know, he helped the club out when he came back. Basically signed a blank check. He could have stayed at Milan and made more money, but he always said he was going to come back to Benfica. He was going to do his best to try and help out, and he did exactly that. And so people don't forget that. You know, he was there for the club, and now I think people were there for him. That being said, I still do believe that people hoping, as I said before, they're hoping that he holds true to his word. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of people there holding him accountable because this is one of them, you know, situations that you could go from hero to zero real quick. And Rui Costa obviously has strong, very strong ties with Luis Filipe Vieira. Luis Filipe Vieira is the one that went and got him from AC Milan, brought him back to Benfica, then, you know, named him basically, you know, part of the general manager of the club, right, in American terms, and then made him his vice president. And so we all know that the ties between Rui Costa and Luis Filipe Vieira are very, very strong. But again, Rui Costa is his own man. Rui Costa does things his own way. And in the 3 months where he appointed himself, call whatever he wants, in the 3 months that he took, you know, control of this club, he did do things differently. So there's a lot of hope that the future is bright. There's a lot of hope that Rui Costa does bring about that transparency that we all want and seek for so many years. So hopefully, you know, he does the right thing. And like I said before, man, I just can't stop saying it. I pray and hope, you know, that this guy does take Benfica to the next level and put them right back where they belong.
Benfica, obviously coming off that unprecedented amount of investment in the summer of 2020, somewhat tightening the purse strings this past summer. We saw Pedrinho, Luca Waldschmidt, two players who had joined in the previous summer, departing to Shakhtar and Wolfsburg. Nuno Tavares heading to Arsenal, Franco Cervi to Celta de Vigo. You know, plenty of players leaving, not much in the way of arrivals, but we did see quite a few, just less in terms of, you know, relating back to the prior summer. And I think that, you know, we've seen Sualiho Mete, Gil Diaz, Rodrigo Pinho, Nemanja Radonjic, none of whom have been able to really showcase their importance under Jorge Jesus. But one player who has become an absolutely massive part in this Benfica team, one of the biggest reasons why they're still, despite losing to Porto Mendes, still alone atop the Primeira Liga leadership, is Roman Yaremchuk. Yaremchuk, 25-year-old Ukrainian forward joining from Ghent in the summer for, I believe, 17 million euros.
Had 75% of his pass.
75% of his pass, exactly right. If Benfica do sell him, which they certainly will at this rate, Yaremchuk, Ghent would receive 25% of the transfer fee. Right. Yaremchuk grabbed himself a goal and an assist in Ukraine's recent victory over Finland in World Cup qualifying. He, I believe, scored the opening goal against Portimonense, but it was ruled out due to a VAR. Overall, it seems like there isn't a single game where this guy isn't at least really close to getting on the score sheet. Talk to me a little bit about Yaremchuk. We know that, you know, that Benfica obviously have a wealth of center forwards, looking at Harris Seferovic, Darwin Nunez, and you saw, of course, Carlos Vinicius leaving on loan to PSV. What would you say is the X factor? What is different about this Yaremchuk in comparison to the others?
I think you combine the other four strikers on this roster, and you bring up Sferovic, who's been injured. He got injured first game in the playoffs for the Champions League, and he's, you know, he hasn't really recovered from that. You have Gonçalo Ramos, a young kid that scores goals against his youth, against his age, you know, competition, tears him apart. You got Pinto that came from Marítimo, was another guy that, you know, could put the ball in the back of the net. And then you have the likes of a Darwin Núñez. And you combine all four of those guys, and together, their ability finishing in front of the net is not nowhere near a Yaremchuk. I think that's what sets him apart. The guy is a natural killer. He gets in front of the net. He gets in the box. 9 times out of 10, he's going to put that ball in the back of the net. Where are the other guys? I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know what it is, but the other Benfica strikers, all at one point or another, they struggle with that. And obviously, you've seen Darwin Núñez came over to Benfica, Portuguese league record transfer fee, maybe that weight on him. He started off hot, then all of a sudden the pressure started getting on him. And then, you know, he was out with knee injury, came back, and he said he has some mental problems that he had to take care of confidence-wise. And so Yaremchuk has been exactly what Benfica needs, that product that comes in right from day one, that you don't have to sit there and develop and get to, you know, to understand Jorge Jesus' tactics. It's just, look, go play, get the ball, put it in the back of the net. That's exactly what he's done. He's had some games better than others, obviously, but some way, somehow, he's always involved. And I think he was the missing piece. I do like, you know, the Sferovics of the world. He never gives up. He's got that raza in him. He's got that attitude. You know, he misses a ton of opportunities, but in order to miss, you got to get in the, you know, in those places, in those spots to miss those opportunities. So he creates somehow, but I think Yaremchuk is, you know, set aside from everybody else. I just think that he's a level above those guys. And the one thing that I put, you know, ahead of everybody else is his finishing ability.
One of the, shall we say, the most controversial positions in Benfica last season was the goalkeeper position. Obviously, Benfica have had a impressive string of goalkeepers in recent years, you know, looking at the likes of Ederson and Jan Oblak. We saw Hilton Leite join from Moreirense, I believe.
Boavista,
my mistake. Boavista in the summer of 2020. And eventually, I think midway through this season, he ended up benching Odysseas Vlachodimos, who had arrived previously from
Panathinaikos.
Panathinaikos, right. Good thing we got the Benfica expert here so he can correct me on this information.
Vlachodimos
has regained his starting spot, though, played pretty much every single game, I believe, for Benfica this season, ahead of Hilton Leite, as well as Milos Vilar. Remember him? What have you made of Vlachodimos in goal so far? Do you think that he is Benfica's best option ahead of a Hilton Leite and Milos Vilar? Overall, what would you say are his biggest strengths and his biggest weaknesses as a goalkeeper?
So much to unpack here. So when Benfica signed Hilton Leite from Boavista, I was told by someone at Seychelles that I can't disclose who, but trust me on this, that by the end of the season, Hilton Leite would be starting over Vlachodimos. And that's exactly what happened. I think Hilton was able to come in and command his box and take control of that defense. And Benfica, you know, they had their ups and downs, but I don't think any of the downs were his fault. You know, I think Benfica last year was just, you know, struggling at times. You could just game in, game out. You could absolutely, before the game starts, you knew they were going to allow two goals. That defense was atrocious. And so when Seldon comes in, he starts taking control of the box and things picked up. And Benfica started getting on a little bit of a streak, but it wasn't enough, you know, to make up the difference with the other two, with the between Porto last season and Sporting. I shouldn't forget. I keep forgetting. I mean, this is once every 20 years, bro. You get what I'm saying? It's hard to wrap your mind around it. But but he goes into the to the Taça de Portugal final. Ball plays, the ball's played through. Elton Leite comes out, commits a bogus foul. Really doesn't. I mean, if you go look at replays, I still haven't seen. I'm not being a Benfiquista here, Zach. I still haven't seen a replay, a clear replay where it shows that he made contact with the forward, but the forward went down. And he got a red card. Vlaco Dimas comes in. Benfica winds up losing the game on a crucial, crucial Vlaco Dimas fumble. So it was just like, okay, you can critique Helton, but Vlaco Dimas made a bigger gaffe. So starting next season, I think Helton Leite's going to be the starting goalkeeper once again. We've seen Vlaco Dimas play in the preseason. We just figured, look, and then Vlaco Dimas in the offseason, I should add this. Vlaco Dimas in the offseason gave some controversial interviews. He criticized Benfica, he criticized the whole situation. And I know Jorge Jesus wasn't happy about it. So we all speculated. We all thought his days were numbered. So we seen him playing in preseason. We figured, oh, he's just getting his value up. And then it was game one, game two, game three. And look, to his credit, you know, he's been magnificent in between the pipes. You know, and so to my surprise, because I think if it was up to me, and again, I'm not at practice every day, but if it was up to me, I would have given it to late because I like the quality. His quality is better than I do. And of Vlaco Dimas. I think you asked about what are his positives and his negatives. And I think Vlaco Dimas in between the pipes, he's phenomenal. He's got cat-like reflexes, right? The dude just shot blocking. He's tremendous. His negatives is he can't come out of his box. He's okay with his feet. Crosses, forget about it. He doesn't catch any crosses. And so in a team like Benfica, that plays in a league where 98% of the teams are inferior competition. Benfica is going to be on the attack in every single game. Everybody's coming on a counterattack. When you do get across into the box, if you just catch the damn ball, you know, and then you spring one of your wingers, one of your strikers, whatever, whether you kick, you throw, whatever, you start a quick counter, that's half the battle for Benfica. But what he does know, he punches everything out to corners, shots, free kicks, straight at him instead of catching it. No. Punches it out. He's constantly giving the ball to the opposite, and he continues to do that this year. You barely ever see a Vlaco Dimas come out for a cross and catch it. And so I think that's the one aspect that Elton Leite is 100 times better than he is, and he's a lot better with his feet as well. So I think those are the qualities that Jorge Jesus admired in him. But to his credit, Vlaco Dimas has been spectacular for Benfica. He's kept Benfica in a lot of games. I know Benfica's played a lot more games where they demolished the competition, but there's been some tough games. And to his credit, he's come up every time when he needed to come up. So it takes some type of perseverance. It takes an attitude. It takes a mental chip to keep that going. And he's done exactly that, where a lot of other goalies, a lot of other players would have just packed it in. And to his credit, he has it. And so for that, I'm a fan.
One of the byproducts of Benfica's heavy spending recent years has been having a bloated squad, of course. And that's something that we've talked about a lot. You know, Benfica were able to get a few decent sales, looking at Pedrinho to Shakhtar, Luka Waldschmidt to Wolfsburg, Nuno Tavares to Arsenal. But in general, you know, they were forced to have to loan out quite a few players. Thiago Dantas going to Tondela, Florentino Luis to Getafe, Nuno Santos, one player we've featured recently on the show as a talent of the week, doing very well at Pasos de Ferreira. One player, though, I would argue the most talented of the bunch, who is really thriving outside of Benfica, outside of his boyhood club, is João Felipe, or Jota. Mm-hmm. Now, Jota is a player who first came to my attention in, I believe, 2018 in the U19 Euros. Portugal missing quite a few big players, such as João Félix, and I believe Jetson Fernandes, Diogo Leite, Rafael Leão. You know, plenty of big-name players still absolutely destroyed the competition and won the U19 Euros. And a big part of that was Jota's performances on the left side of attack. Finished as a joint top scorer in the U19 Euros, getting
with 5
goals. Just absolutely massive alongside the likes of Trincao, Francisco Trincao, who was his partner on the other side of attack. Jota, though, hasn't really gotten much in the way of consistent opportunities at Benfica. Spent a year on loan in Real Valladolid, and now currently at Celtic, where he is playing under Ange Postecoglou. Postecoglou. I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that wrong.
It sounds great to me.
But I should mention, this is not a dry loan. This is not a dry loan in that Celtic have an option to buy Jota for a reported fee of £6.5 million, which I think that looking at his talent, looking at his performances at Celtic, and by the way, if you haven't yet, make sure to check out Sean McGinley's fantastic article on Jota's importance on BTL Vid, absolutely brilliant analysis on just what he is offering to Celtic, and find it on breakingthelines.com. Really good article on Jota. And overall, I feel like he's just another player who, I can see you're rolling your eyes.
Right, no, I'm not. I'm not at all. No.
Another Seychelles player who I think did not get the opportunities he deserved. Talk to me about Jota. What are your thoughts on his treatment at the club? Do you feel like this is potentially another player who got away from Benfica?
I'll start by this. For those of you listening to the Cartolinas podcast that don't really know about Jota, or João Felipe, right? Go back to 2016, 2017, the big stud in that Benfica formation. It wasn't the other João that we've all heard about by now, João Félix. It was this kid. This was the kid that much was expected from. And I think he got lost in the shuffle. As you stated before, went to Valladolid, didn't really do much. Comes back to Benfica, gets loaned out to Celtic. And credit to him. He's doing what he has to do. That's a player, again, that shows and proves to me that he wants to get to the next level. But, and this is not a criticism on Jota, but I think that when you look at everything, right, that you look at all the players that have come out of Seychelles, that have come out of Benfica, you just see year after year, stud going to the EPL, going to La Liga, going to wherever, some of the biggest teams in the world, constantly, year after year. These kids just start to expect that we're the next. Oh, I'm the next. I'm the man. I'm the next. And all of a sudden, their mind gets made up that they don't longer want to be there. And you could tell by the way they play on the field, it's as if, you know, their body's there, but their mind is elsewhere. And I think some of that might have crept into his mind, into his psyche. And he wasn't nowhere near the player that we all expected him to be. He had a couple of flashes under Bruno Lage, but that was it. He nowhere consistent. Wasn't making his magical runs down the wing where he likes to dribble, you know, crosses, get players involved. He was a guy that every time he got to play, it seemed like he was always taking a touch too much, too many. It was like, bro, give it up. And he always wanted to impress. And again, maybe he was just putting pressure on himself because every other one of his teammates was probably gone by that time already. The guys that he came up from, you know, through Seychelles with, these guys are playing at Manchester City. They're playing at Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona's, whatever, the biggest teams in the world, Bayern Munich, and whatever. And all of a sudden, he finds himself being there. He's like, bro, I got to do something to catch the eye. And I think that pressure weighed on him. Went to Valladolid for some reason. I don't know what it was. I didn't pay much attention to him out there, but he didn't get as much playing time as we all anticipated. And so we knew right from then and there, there was no way he was going to be part of this squad. Especially when you got the Evertons of the world, you have the Rafas on the other side, you have Darwin that could play in the wing, and he's done a phenomenal job this year playing on that left wing position because you got Rafa just demolishing the league on the other side. João Mário, another guy that's come in fit like a glove, has been spectacular at Benfica. So you knew the spots were limited, and Benfica and Jorge Jesus wanted to take that roster limit. He wanted to shorten it because I think Benfica had like 31, 32 players last season. He wanted to shorten it to like about 25, and I still think that's his intention. And we all knew the fact that João Felipe Jota didn't get much burn last year if I had the lead, that wasn't going to help him any. So, look, credit to him going out there and doing what he has to do. He's tearing, but he's playing really well. It's early on. He's playing really well, but he needs to carry this consistency throughout the rest of the season. And, yeah, I think for 6.5 mil, I mean, you know, that's nothing. And so I don't doubt that Celta will pick up that option. A lot of Benfiquistas that I know and on Twitter, guys that, you know, obviously conversating back and forth, a lot of people were upset that it was only 6.5 million. We felt there was no need, even myself. I mean, there's no need to put that clause in there. Let him go out on loan, fine, see what he does, and then bring him up. But at 6.5, that's a bargain for a player of his caliber.
Absolutely. Definitely check out the article that we just posted on Jota. Benfica, of course, was selling and loaning out a lot of players. Did manage to get some really important signings, though, in Yaremchuk and João Mário. We'll see, you know, how other players such as Nemanja Radonjić and Valentino Lazaro do. But right now, two players who joined in the summer and have already established themselves as not just starters, but just indispensable to the way that Benfica play under Jorge Jesus, João Mário and Roman Yaremchuk. João Mário, of course, playing a massive part in Sporting's league title last season, their first league title in 19 years. Seemed like Sporting would sign him on a permanent deal after his impressive loan spell. Didn't work out that way. They pretty much lowballed him in the salary offer, and he ended up joining Benfica in a quote-unquote free transfer, but obviously a lot more to that, as I'm sure you could talk about. But just talk to me, you know, how important has João Mário been for Benfica in this 3-4-3? And also, you know, João Mário getting a start in Portugal's friendly against Qatar in the Estádio Algarve. Do you think that we could be seeing a renaissance for João Mário, both not just in terms of his club football, but country as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think anybody that comes to Benfica, especially a Portuguese player, and he's a starter at Benfica, he's going to be part of the national team with ease. And we see that with all three big clubs, you know, to be honest with you. Any one of those guys starts and they get called up. Even you see a guy like him, right, to use him as a perfect example. Guy that had been missing for, 2 years or whatever it was on the national team. He had nowhere to be found all of a sudden. Comes to Benfica. He's been, look, I don't want to say he's been spectacular, but he's been Mr. Consistency. He solidified that midfield. Benfica had a guy that, you know, if you listen to me on a Benfica podcast or you check me out on Twitter or whatever it is, you see I'm always, you know, raving about my boy Adel Taarabt. That's a personal favorite. Now, I understand there's limitations to Adel Taarabt. He's not a guy that's a box-to-box midfielder. He's not a guy that's going to do the dirty work. He tries. I give him credit. He's tried. At least other players wouldn't have tried. But he's tried, and he's done the very best that he could to turn his career around after 5 weeks and 5 years at the beach. But João Mário gives you that consistency. He gives you that box-to-box play. He's a guy that's been playing alongside the likes of Weigl, and they've tore up the Portuguese league. They've tore up every midfield that they've played against. They've done really well. I mean, tore up, you know, look, Zach, I forgot that I'm actually talking to you on a podcast, not on the phone. That's phone conversation. But they've played really well together. That tandem has been fantastic. And João Mário is a guy that when Benfica first signed him, brought him back from Inter Milan, a guy that obviously played last year at Sporting. To Sporting, they figured it wasn't that important to them. They had the likes of Mateus Nunes, young player, guy that's got called up as well to the Portuguese national team. They figured, look, we got plenty of options. No reason to go after this guy. And look, as a Benfiquista, thank you very much. For letting him slide our way, because he's been the missing piece that we've had in that midfield. And credit to him, he's turned it around. Again, I keep saying this over and over, but this we just keep talking about players that were going through ups and downs. And he's got called up back to the national team. I think he won't have, if he plays to this level, he continues playing to this level at Benfica, I think he's got a spot locked up for himself on the national team. As far as starting, I don't know, but Portugal is stacked. As we know, Portugal's got a tremendous amount of quality players throughout world football. They only lack, in my opinion, on the defensive side of the ball, on the defensive line. I should say defensive side of the ball. I mean, like I'm talking about the NFL here. On the defensive line, but from the midfield going forward, there's just options after options. Benfica, Portugal have a plethora of options, and I think he'll struggle at times to get in that starting 11. But there's no reason why he can't come in off the bench, you know, in a game that Portugal's winning 2-1 or 2-0 to calm things down and control the pace of the game, control the game and just, you know, keep the ball away from the opposition. So I absolutely think, yeah, as you said, Renaissance man, he's got that in him.
Portugal obviously still have their World Cup qualifier with Luxembourg to play at the Estádio Algarve, but getting off to an impressive start, another impressive result with a 3-0 victory against Qatar, with Diogo Costa getting his full debut in between the sticks. Talked about him a lot, you know, getting also being awarded with the Primeira Liga Goalkeeper of the Month, well-deserved for the Porto man. Seeing a back four of Diogo Dalot, José Font, Danilo Pereira, Nuno Mendes, midfield of João Mário, of course, William Carvalho, Mateus Nunes, another interesting debutant, as well as an attacking three of Gonçalo Guedes, André Silva, and Cristiano Ronaldo. A lot of stuff to unpack there, but the player who I want to talk about didn't start. In fact, he came off the bench for his senior team debut, and that is Rafael Leão. So Leão, after a fantastic start to the season for AC Milan, coming off the bench at halftime for Cristiano Ronaldo, and getting an assist, assisting André Silva's goal in the 3-0 victory. You know, I mentioned Rafael Leão on the show last week in my talent of the week. It really does seem like he's finally starting to put the pieces together under Stefano Pioli. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, definitely been a just reward for him getting into the Portuguese national team for the first time. Just how big of a role do you think Rafael Leão can play for Portugal in the coming years? Do you think he could potentially be the long-term option in the center forward position?
I like Rafael Leão a lot. I've always liked him. Even in his young days at Sporting, I've always liked the kid. I think he has a tremendous amount of potential to get to the next level. And I'm glad that at my AC Milan, he's finally put, as you said, put all the pieces together. He's playing with confidence. You see me attacking in. He's you know, tearing apart the defense. He's scoring goals. And it's important for a player, a young player like that, to play, you know, think about it. A youngster like that playing alongside the Ibras of the world, the pressure that these guys have put on, but at the same time, they're teaching him. And so he's soaking that all in and he's putting it together. And finally, you see it, the whole package on the field, and it's resulting into goals. And so I'm ecstatic for him. On the Portuguese national team, he got a little bit lucky that Rafa picked up an injury, got sent home, and he was called to replace. He was called up to replace him. But you know what? He took advantage of his opportunity. As you stated, had an assist. He had a shot off the crossbar. You could tell he was involved. You could tell this is a kid that you want to see some more. I'd rather see the likes of the Mateus Nunes of the world, the Rafael Leões, over the likes of William Carvalho. I don't understand why this guy is still on the national team. I understand he's having somewhat of a comeback season at Betis, but I think he's given it all that we need to see on this national team. There's other options, young options. Give me the Palhinhas of the world. Give me these other guys. Put them on the field. Let's see what we can get from these guys, because I think William Carvalho's better days are far behind them. And so I'm ecstatic when you see the likes of Rafael Leão. I think, you know, the future is bright. Portugal is known worldwide for Cork and for Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, but the fact is that Portugal still has a ton of talent. You look at the U20 team, it's stacked, right? There's plenty of talent that's going to come up over the next 2-3 years that's going to make a difference. And I want to see these young bucks playing in these meaningless games against the Qataris of the world. No disrespect to them, but it's a glorified friendly, okay? And I want to see these youngsters get those minutes, get those debuts in, get that experience, because when it comes to meaningful games, that experience is going to pay off big time. And Rafael Leão is getting that experience at Milan in the Champions League. He's getting that experience in the tough Serie A. And now he's putting it together, getting that experience on the Portuguese national team, and I couldn't be happier for him.
It is funny how Fernando Santos said that William Carvalho would not be on the Portugal Euro squad if it had not been extended to 26 players. Uh-huh.
And then, yet he started both games, started the first two games.
Uh-huh. Right, exactly.
Makes no sense, dude. That coach, look, thank you for everything you did in 2016. Thank you for the 62 ties, and thank you for all that, right? But at the end of the day, you brought the cup home. But I think it's time for you to go. I think he holds Portugal back, and I'll never forget what he's done for us, but it's time for a change. This team, it has too much talent to be held back, and I think he holds us back. But look, credit to him. He's brought up the the Rafael Leons of the world, the kid Costa, Costa, right, from Porto. He's been lights out. Reminds me, and I know he gets this comparison often, but it reminds me of young Vitor Bahia. I was a little bit young, but I still remember Vitor Bahia in his early days. It was, you know, played in a fantastic day. I think he gave up like 5 goals that 190 or 91 season, whatever it was, as a youngster. And I think this kid is headed down that path. I think this kid could be the future for the Portuguese national team. But again, as I stated before, Portugal has a ton of talent coming up through their youth ranks. So, you know, you're here today, but if you don't keep performing at the level that you're expected to perform, hey, there's plenty of other guys lined up to take your spot.
Ton of talent. Another player who will be competing with Diogo Costa as, you know, the chance to become the long-term option between the sticks for the Soso is Luis Massimiano, who's having a great start mm-hmm. season at Granada. Moving back to Benfica, though, you know, we mentioned they had a summer of unprecedented investment, you know, bringing in the likes of Nicolas Otamendi, Darwin Nunes, Pedrinho, Luca Waldschmidt. One player who they didn't manage to bring in was Lucas Verissimo, who they're very close to getting a deal done. Failed to get it done in time, though, and were forced to wait until January to bring in the Brazilian defender. You know, Verissimo has been, I think, really important for Benfica's turnaround under Jorge Jesus, shifting to this 3-4-3 system with Verissimo playing on the right side of that back three, Nicolas Otamendi playing as the middle center back, Jan Vertonghen on the left. Just how good has Verissimo been, obviously, back in the Brazil squad? What do you think his ceiling is as a defender?
He's a little kamikaze at times. When he comes into tag, he comes into break. He means business. And he could have cost Benfica big time against PSV with an early red card. But, you know, he was able to stabilize that back line. Obviously, you know, Benfica with Otamendi and Vertonghen, two well-seasoned veterans in, you know, 33 and 34. Their legs aren't what they used to be. So Verissimo brings in that speed. He's able to cover a lot of ground. And he's, you know, he's made a huge difference. He allowed Benfica to switch to a 3-4-3. Because when you have the likes of Otamendi and Vertonghen, you're not going to sit either one of those guys. So you have to find a spot for Verissimo. Going back on your point when you said Benfica, for one reason or another, they weren't able to finalize the deal last summer. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they lost that game to PAOK that we talked about here at the beginning of the pod. When they lost that game, I think all of a sudden, Benfica's not qualifying for the Champions League and a lot of that investment, because I think they still would have invested even more. They would have brought in more players had they made it to the Champions League. And so I think he was just one of those casualties. But JJ had it in mind that he wanted his guy. And we all know how JJ is. He's going to whine and pout until he gets his way. And he got his way, and I'm glad that he's here. I think he's enjoyed playing in Portugal as well. He's had some positive things to say. Gets called up to the Brazilian national team, and now we just take, you know, we hope he takes it to the next level. As far as his ceiling, I like Verissimo, but there's still some parts of his game that he has to refine. Again, that physicality needs to make better decisions. He's an absolute animal, and you like that in a defender, but he needs to be able to control that at times. And so I think he needs to spend some more time at the Louvre to refine those negatives.
Lucas Verissimo, 26 years old, joining from Santos, have been very important for Benfica. As you mentioned, still a lot to improve on. Another Brazilian defender that they have in their squad, though, 6 years younger than Verissimo, is Felipe Rodrigues da Silva, or Morato.
Morato.
Who joined from Sao Paulo's academy in 2019 and has had to wait for an opportunity for quite a long time, but it seems like he's just on the brink of cracking into the starting lineup. Obviously, Vertonghen and Otamendi and Verissimo are the back three right now, but Benfica are playing a lot of matches, and Morato has already been given several starting opportunities. Otamendi turning 34 in February. Vertonghen, I believe,
he's already 34,
right, turning 35. You know, neither of those two are spring chickens, obviously. What have you made of Morato? How big of a role do you think he can play in this Benfica team this season? Who do you think has the higher ceiling between him and Verissimo?
Look, Morato's got a huge role to play this season. I mean, because of, as you mentioned before, One center back's 33, soon to be 34. And the other one's already 34, soon to be 35. So those guys have already missed game time this year. And Morato had to step in. And I'll be honest with you, as a huge Benfiquista that I am, I was a little bit worried because every time I seen him, he didn't give me that confidence that I expected from a kid that had been at Benfica for a while, playing on the B team, looked a little bit flat-footed, wasn't sure with the ball at his feet, looked like he was a little hesitant, you know, missing, lacking some confidence. And all of a sudden, he's been able to step in, and I guess them veterans have done a magnificent job of, you know, getting him to believe and getting him to fit in well with the team, and he's playing. He's playing really well. He has been playing really well. Lefty center back. There's not many of those. He seems a little slow-footed, but when the guy turns it on, you can tell he's got some wheels. He's a big boy. So there's the future is very bright for him, and I just hope that Benfica is able to get the very best out of him, develop him to where we all anticipated he was going to get to, because when Benfica got him from Sao Paulo as an 18-year-old for 6 million euros, right? That's a lot of money for a kid that just been called up to the main squad at Botafogo. We all thought, okay, this is the future. And all of a sudden, he's buried on the B team for 3 years, and you start to second guess. You start to doubt because the kid, if he was the goods, you wouldn't be spending that much time down there as he was. But look, to his credit, he's come up. He's grabbed the opportunity by the horns, and I think we have a serious kid that could develop into a serious center back in the near future. He's beat out the likes of Ferro, a guy that has experience at this level. Guy that went out to Valencia on loan playing one game last year. It was his first game against Real Madrid, and then I don't think he played another minute. But he came back, another guy that at one point was tremendous. There's a lot of people that when he came up were saying he was better than the Ruben Dias because the guy could actually pick out a pass. He could play with the ball at his feet. Totally different class defender than the Ruben Dias. But then all of a sudden, from one day to the next, the switch went off, and we've never seen that same Ferro. So Morato comes up. Like I said, he's played the minutes that he had to play in important games, and he's come up, you know, roses in all those games. So I think it's, you know, it's the future is bright, and I think he's going to play a tremendous amount of minutes because of them all, you know, them all geezers at the back as well.
Still pretty certain that it is, you know, Vertonghen, Otamendi, and Verissimo until one of them proves otherwise. Moving forward, you know, there's In the left wing back position, Alex Grimaldo doing fairly well so far in the left wing back position. Right wing back, I would argue that this is probably the most controversial, shall we say, of the positions. You have Diogo Gonçalves, who I would argue is the strongest option right now. You have Gilberto. You have Valentino Lazzaro, obviously joining on loan from Inter Milan. Andre Almeida, who is the captain and I would argue the weakest option of the bunch. Gil Diaz, who I thought had a decent cameo against Portimonense. What's your take on the right wing back position? Who do you think should be starting there?
When Benfica, and I don't know if I'm, one of us is wrong, because I thought Valentino Lazaro was on a permanent deal. I wasn't sure it was on a, I think it was on a permanent if I'm not mistaken, but I might be wrong. But when he joined, that move received a tremendous amount of criticism because, like, what do you need four right backs for? And that just so happens you have one healthy and the other three are injured. So it's like, it's a good thing we have four. But I do think that our best option, when healthy, it is Valentino Lazaro. Unfortunately, he got hurt against Barcelona last week, and now he's going to spend some time on the shelf. But I do think that when fit, he gives us our best option going forward in defending. He's an absolute tractor. He's got wheels. He's got ability, and we know Benfica attacks a lot down the wings, and I think he could pick out of the four, out of the bunch, he's the one that picking out picks out a cross better than any other one of those guys. So he'll be able to get involved in that offense. So I think because of that, he's going to win out. Diogo Gonçalves, I expected a tremendous amount from him. He's a kid that came up in the Benfica youth system, played in the Portuguese national team youth rank, you know, his whole youth career on the right wing. And so Benfica adapted him into a right back. We knew he was going to have difficulties defending, but offensively, he shouldn't have no troubles. And I think he struggled at times last year. And so I think, look, Valentino is the guy that's going to take this in meaningful games. And then you get the likes of Gilberto Carlos. We call him Gilberto Carlos. But Gilberto comes in. He's got a lot of raza, and he's actually improved this year. Benfica got him last year from Fluminense, if I'm not mistaken, for 1.5 mil for 50% of his pass or whatever it was. And struggled. A lot of people criticize that move big time. But this year, he's actually played well.
Right. We talked a lot about João Mario as well, his importance. But the player next to him in the double pivot, Julian Weigl, obviously being voted as Benfica's player of the season last season, continued his performances so far, had a masterful performance both on and off the ball in their recent 3-0 victory against Barcelona. Talk to me a little bit about the German midfielder's importance.
When he first arrived, he struggled. He came over from Dortmund for 20 mil. He struggled. There was a lot of controversy inside the locker room. There was a lot of, you know, unhappiness from players. But by all this regular bullcrap you get in Portuguese football over salaries and whatnot, and I think a lot of that played with his mind. But I think his biggest problem when he arrived at Benfica was he wasn't sure if he was playing the 8 or if he was playing the 6. And if they kept going back and forth, They juggle those positions over and over, and I think it took him a time. It took him a while to get, you know, comfortable to take that spot. You know, take the reins of that spot, and he's finally done that this year. I think he's gotten comfortable under Jorge Jesus last year. Even last year at the beginning of the season, it took him a little bit. We weren't sure. Again, was he the prototypical number 6 that Jorge Jesus likes to play with? He struggled, but he turned it around, as you stated before. Benfica player of the season, and this year he started off the season, you know, going crazy. In that game against Barcelona, it showed you what this guy is capable of. There's tons of rumors in the offseason that Chelsea was interested in him because him and Tuchel have worked together. Obviously, they know each other really well. He knows what kind of player he is, and I thought for a minute that he was, you know, he would be leaving when Mate, I can't pronounce that dude's name. When he arrived, I thought, look, this just goes to show you this is going to be Benfica's number 6, and it just opens the door for Weigl to leave. But he stuck around, and he's adapted to Portugal. He's adapted to the lifestyle at Benfica. Speaks Portuguese. He attempts to do that daily Portuguese lifestyle, and I think he's really asserted himself, and he's been really fantastic player this year. And I know for those of you listening, he's like, oh, bro, this guy's just everybody's been fantastic. Yeah, I mean, nobody's been bad. Look, they've had their ups and downs, but for the most part, they've been really good. They obviously dropped the game this past weekend against Portimonense, as you stated, the first loss of the season. But that was a game that myself as a Benfica, I was upset with the loss. You never want to lose that. But it was a game that Benfica absolutely dominated. They had like 24 shots on goal. It was just that day they couldn't score. It was just they did everything right until they got into the final third, and they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. And credit to the opposition, they took advantage of a corner kick one of the few times they came to our goal, and they scored, and they defended well. A lot of people criticized JJ leading up to that game in the Portimonense press conference leading up to that game, and JJ says, I'll guarantee you one thing, Portimonense is going to defend better than Barcelona. And everybody's like, this guy taking digs, you know, but it was exactly that. But they were fortunate. Their goalkeeper played, you know, out of this world. And Benfica missed a lot of opportunities, but look, they held on for a 1-0 victory. And I think it's not, you know, the end of, you know, it's not doom and gloom at Benfica headquarters again, because they played really well. I think people just understand that you're going to have games like this. And fortunately, we're still top of the league, and there's many more games to come. And Benfica do have a deep squad. You have the likes of Pizzi. You haven't even mentioned the guy barely plays, but that's the type of caliber of player that's on the bench. I understand he's not a tremendous player. He's been in Portugal for certain, you know, for 10 years or whatever it is, it seems now. If he was any good, he would have been out. But at the end of the day, in the Portuguese league, he's still a really good player, a player that can make the difference at any game, at any moment. And he's still on the bench sitting there. The Delta opposite of the world, Fredo Weeks is coming back. Gonçalo Ramos hasn't really played much lately, but he's there. You have Benfica just has a plethora of other options. Maite, as we stated before. That Rajanović got picked up an injury. He's on loan from Marseille with an option to buy real cheap, I think. Or I think it's not an obligatory option to buy, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, he's going to be sticking around. There's just so many other options that Benfica has this year. So they're by far, I think, in my estimation, the deepest team in the Portuguese league.
Absolutely agree. I do think they are the deepest squad in the league. What do you think is the Achilles heel of this Benfica team? Either tactically or individually, if there's anything that's going to stop them from winning the league title, which I think has to be the goal for them this season, what is it going to be?
Injuries to that back line?
I think that's a cop-out.
You think? I'm just being honest. I think.
But that's a hypothetical. Like, I'm talking about, like, what do you think, like, what have you noticed tactically that's been concerning for you? Like, they could have injuries. Porto could have injuries. Sporting could have injuries. You know, that's just the thing that happens in football. But what do you think, like, apart from injuries, what do you think is their biggest Achilles heel?
I don't see one, bro. I'll come up with one. Jorge Jesus. How about that? Ooh. I think he's the guy that we've seen him at his best and we've also seen him at his worst. If JJ just does what we all expect him to do, coaches his team, motivates his players, he likes to press all the right buttons, but at the same time, when he invents, I think that's when Benfica's at its weakness. And so we never know if Benfica is going to come out in a 3-4-3 or 4-4-2. We don't know. We've seen in previous games, in previous years at Benfica, where you got David Luiz at left back and Benfica's losing like 5-0 to Porto. We've seen those types of moves. So I would think the biggest uncertainty is a Jorge Jesus. But aside from that, only major injuries is going to stop Benfica from really being there at the end of the season, you know, with an opportunity to win the title. Because I just think that they're that much improved. They have options. They could actually sustain, they could actually get injuries up front and be okay. In the back line, that's to me the concern. But now, since you asked me, I'll ask you, because you pressed me on it. What's, in your mind, what's holding Benfica back from possibly winning the league? What's the one thing that can hold them back? Aside from JJ, because don't steal that one. I mentioned that one.
Great question. I think injuries to the back line, you know, we've seen how...
That's a cop-out.
I really am not sure. They do have a very deep squad. I feel like their options on the flanks aren't as good as I would say Sporting or Porto. They're not bad either, but I just think, you know...
Well, you got Rafa on the right side. Rafa's as good as any of those options on the other team.
Talking about Rafa's role, he's not really a natural... Well, okay, Rafa, I think, yes, he plays on the flank, but also you see him kind of dropping into more central areas almost, you know, playing as...
Not no more.
Well, I think we saw a lot of that in Porto Moleche's game when...
But look, Zach, here's the thing. No, but I just want to throw this because I'm sorry, you're right. But I wanted to throw this in because we haven't just think about this. The magnitude of player that Benfica signed that we haven't even talked about. He hasn't really taken part in the season. But you talk about a winger, you talk about an option at the wing. That's Everton Cebolinha. A guy that's come over for 23 mil. A guy that was expected to perform, take Benfica to the next level. A guy that was leading the Brazilian national team in goals in the Copa America has come over and has been an absolute bust. So if JJ is able to recover this guy, and all of a sudden you got him on one wing and you got Rafa on the other wing, I think Benfica do have options. Okay. Darwin has been playing on a wing. He's been fantastic. Still scores 2 goals a game, but could have 6 goals a game. Right. But I do agree with you. There are question marks. If Rafa gets injured, who's going to play? It's going to be Pizzi. You're okay, but Pizzi is not a natural winger. But for the Portuguese league, that's enough. On the left side, now you got Darwin. But prior to Darwin, you had Everton, and then it was supposed to be Radonjić, what I can't pronounce that dude's name. Right? But I'll be honest. I'd be lying to you if I told you I knew anything about the guy. I don't know much about him. So I don't even know. Would he be a suitable replacement? I don't know enough about him. I haven't seen him play enough at Benfica. Then on the right side, I think if you really want to bring it back, you can move. Benfica do have 4 defenders. You could pull Lazaru as a right winger because that's his natural position as well. So I don't want to shortchange Benfica here. I get it. You think the opposition's got better options. Credit to you. But I think if Everton Cebolinha was the player that we all expected him to be, there isn't a player in Portugal at the wing position that's as good as an Everton is supposed to be. And he's not been. So I'm not at this point. He's been here a year and almost a half. So I'm not expecting him to show up next week to the game and be the old Everton. But that's the qualities that he has. That's the quality, the you know, caliber of player that Benfica has just sitting there rotting on the bench.
Yeah, Cebolinha has been an absolutely massive flop so far. Had some decent games. But I definitely think that you look at the pecking order right now. I mean, Darwin Nunes, Rafa, and Yaremchuk is clearly the option in the front three. So we'll see what happens. Moving on, though, I want to talk about our talent of the week section. Finish off this podcast with our talent of the week. Last week, I went with Rafael Leão, who I think, you know, deservedly rewarded with a call up to the Portuguese national team. And, you know, as I mentioned, could very well be the long-term option in that center forward position for Portugal. One player, though, who I wouldn't write off, I think may have lesser chances, but I think it could be, it should definitely be talked about as one of those options moving forward in the center forward position, is Gonçalo Ramos. Gonçalo Ramos, we've talked a lot about this player, obviously from the Benfica Seychelles Academy, 20 years old, and hasn't gotten much in the way of opportunities under Jorge Jesus this season. Came on against Portimonense and nearly grabbed himself a goal. But 6 goals now in 10 games for Portugal's U21 side after grabbing I believe 4 goals, right? A poker, not that kind of poker in France, but so yeah,
If you go before that game, 9 games, 2 goals, it wasn't looking that great.
Right. No, that's fair. But 4 goals against Liechtenstein's U21 side, which obviously, you know, that's a worse team than any team in the Primera Liga. But overall, you know, he is a player who, when he plays, he almost always scores. Benfica, you know, coming out of international break with a trip to Trofense for the Taça de Portugal, followed by a match against Bayern Munich. Would expect, obviously, a lot of heavy rotation in that match, and I would definitely expect Gonçalo Ramos to get a starting spot, followed by their game against Bayern, followed by a game against Vizela, and then a cup match against Vitoria on October 27th, closing out the month with a visit to Estoril Praia, arguably the breakthrough sensation of the season so far. I think there's enough games in there for Gonçalo to get, I think, 2 starts, depending on how he does. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Gonçalo Ramos? What do you feel that his treatment, that Jorge Jesus' treatment of him has been about unfair? Overall, what do you think he needs to work on to take the next step in his development?
I think he's just a casualty of the numbers. As we stated before, there's 5 strikers on this team. You have Yaramchuk, Darwin, Seferovic, and Rodrigo Pinho, and then he's the 5th guy, he's the youngest guy. JJ doesn't exactly fall in love with youngsters. So, you know, if you're young and you're playing, you really have impressed them. And Gonzalo's got the tools. He's got the work rate. He's got the ability. But at times in front of goal, you know, misses more than what we all would like. So I think he's one of those perfect players that should have been sent out on loan. But at the beginning of the season, you weren't sure with, you know, who's coming in and who wasn't going. So they kept him around. But I think he would have been better served going out alone and just playing and getting into some team's rotation in the first league and scoring against, you know, major competition in the Portuguese Primeira Division. We'll see what happens. Maybe that still happens here in the second half. But I do agree with you. I think the next game coming out for the Taça da Liga, he'll get a start. And then the Vitória game, the cup game against Vitória, we'll see what happens. There's, you know, is Ferovic healthy? Is Rodrigo Pinho back? We'll see what happens. If these guys get healthy, I think they're going to need to get some minutes as well, because you got to get these guys back in a rotation, back into form. And it's, you know, so again, quality player. You talked about Leon being the future at the center forward position. I think Gonçalo Ramos might still be getting involved in that conversation in the near future. But right now, still too raw. I think Benfica should have sent him out on loan and, you know, to get that to next step to the development.
Absolutely. Who is your talent of the week, Cristiano?
My talent of the week, sticking with Benfica, I'll go with my boy, Jetson Fernandes. Not only because that's my dude, but because there's a lot of question marks in the Benfica world as to why Jorge Jesus kept him on the team. Hasn't really got much playing time, but when he's gotten on into the field, he's actually played really well. I think on his last appearance, he surprised a lot of people. I think he supplanted Adel Taarabt as that next option. And I think he'll get a lot more playing time here coming out of the international break. And I'm talking about in meaningful games. I'm not just talking about a Taça da Cerveja games, meaningful games. We'll see what happens. We'll see that Galatasaray is still interested in him. We'll see this Turkish teams can't leave him alone. They're still trying to sign him. They'll see what happens come the January transfer window. But I think that, you know, Jorge Jesus is going to take him out for a ride a little bit here in the next couple of games to see what we really have. And I think he's, again, player that came up with the Benfica youth system, player that's been a part of those international Portuguese national teams. And, you know, he's been there. He's been one of Portugal's best and brightest. And I think he's got all the abilities to get to the next level. Unfortunately, I don't understand. And I told him, I texted him, said, I don't understand why you're going on loan to Tottenham. You're never going to play under that in that squad with JJ, Mourinho. And he didn't. I think he played like one game or whatever it was. And then he finally terminated his contract, his loan, and he went to Galatasaray, got some playing time. And players of that age, Gonzalo Ramos included, they're doing themselves no good sitting on the bench. Sometimes it's better to go to a Riwa, to a Paso Ferreira, to a Bovista and playing meaningful minutes, right? You're not going to have the 60, the, not 60, but the 50,000 at the game week after week. But you're going to play. You're going to develop. And I think these players and their management need to be smarter about where they send these kids.
Absolutely. I remember saying at the time, I thought this move was practically career suicide for Jetson. I mean, he wasn't going to get, he's never going to get enough playing time at Tottenham if he wasn't at Benfica. That West Ham would have been a better option. But as you mentioned, you know, taking that ego check and going to a Huav, going to a Tondela, that's something that we haven't seen enough of from, I think, a lot of Portuguese youngsters. Tomás Esteves, I believe, you know, had the chance to join Vitória de Guimarães and ended up rejecting it. So now he's stuck in Porto's youth team. So I think that we, you know, it's something that we need to see a lot more of. We'll see what happens with Jetson, but it is kind of bizarre that Benfica were rejecting offers in the range of, what was it, like 7.5 million for 50% of his pass. Pretty ridiculous amount of money for a player who isn't going to be, you know, playing much. Hopefully he does get those opportunities, though, that he has been promised under Jorge Jesus. Because, you know, we saw his importance, you know, in Turkey last season at Galatasaray. You know, I think it doesn't make sense to reject that money, reject that opportunity for Jetson to develop with consistent game time when you're not going to play him. We'll see what happens. Hopefully they're able to give him some minutes in the upcoming fixtures. Yeah, without any further ado, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this show. It was a real joy to have Cristiano on, great friend, and always a pleasure to have you on, amigo. Anything else you want to shout out or plug before we finish this?
Ah, man, just to you, shout out to you. Thank you very much for all you do for Portuguese soccer. Appreciate everything you do, breaking the lines, cortalinhas, whatever. Everything you guys, half the time sounds like you're saying cortalinas, cortalinhas. I don't know what you're saying, but whatever you're saying, Zach, keep it up. You do a phenomenal job, man. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be part of the Breaking the Lines family, man. And anytime you need to talk about Benfica, I'm here to talk about the other stuff. I'd rather go put my daughter to sleep.
Absolutely. Hopefully you can play the last few weeks of the Cortelinish podcast to help put her to sleep.
But definitely play this one. She'll fall asleep right away.
No, absolutely. But yeah, thank you so much, Cristiano, once again. It was an absolute joy to have you on. Definitely not the last time you will be on the podcast. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Make sure to subscribe and let us know if there's anybody else you'd like us to have on the next episode of the Cortelinhas podcast.